I am Brian Fritz, and he is Justin Barrasso from Sports Illustrated joining me this week. And both of us a little bit under the weather. I blame Wrestle Kingdom 11 for everything. Don't you, Justin?
I do. Part of it is I'm getting old is what the easy one. But, we can go with it. Getting up at 4 in the morning trying to watch was it's not that hard. We're watching pro wrestling, and it was spectacular.
Right.
But definitely. It's an easy cop-out for us. But thank you for having me on.
Well, appreciate it, man. You watched it live. I will admit, I did not watch it live. I was about 3 hours behind, but I made sure that I got up this morning to watch it. And, man, like you said, it was a fantastic show. I mean, what were your expectations for the show, and did they meet them?
Great question. They were too high. And I think that's the problem I have with so many things. The main event on Raw, which wasn't really a true main event, but the segment with Goldberg and Owens and Jericho, and I had such high expectations for that. And you're looking forward to it because it's the end of the show. And I put all my expectations, on, and I'll call it a double main event, because Tanahashi and Naito, I mean, that's main event worthy. And then the main event with the last match of the night with Omega and Okada. And that literally, I've got to decompress for 6 months and then think about it and talk about it and watch. But that's literally maybe the greatest match I've ever seen. And Omega spots aren't just spots for spots. Like, they tell a story. At times, I know we're jumping around, but with the weekly column on SI, I love doing the Wrestlers Tribune. And today it was Disco Inferno. And he talked about how somebody, if they're not careful, like, you need to build more character, which Tenny actually does really well. But somebody could paralyze themselves. Like, some of the things they do. And all I could think of were Disco's words. It is. I'm blaming Wrestle Kingdom for the sickness. All I can think of were Disco's words when Kenny took that flying backdrop out of the ring onto the table. That's not a WWE prop table either. That was a hard wooden table that didn't want to break, that isn't designed to get a 250-pound man tossed on it. I thought that, to answer a short question in a very long manner, I thought the main event was great. It lived up to it. It surpassed my expectations.
And you know what,
the show was amazing.
Yeah, it was. You know, and you know, when it came to that match, and when it came to Omega in particular, I mean, give both of them all the credit in the world, because Okada was amazing in that match as well. The bumps that Omega took in particular, the way that he was letting his body get thrown around there was, you know, just ridiculous. You mentioned that bump. You know, you talked about the moonsault that he did from on the top rope to over the guardrail to the floor. There was other stuff where he was taking stuff going into the corner face first. It was really, really hard. And then, you know, on the flip side, to me, there was two super scary moves. One was, you know, the bump through the table on the outside. The other was right. The dragon suplex Kenny gave Okada off the top rope. I was like, geez almighty, you're going to kill this guy, literally doing that. I mean, I was scared watching that. I was just like, he can't do this move, and then he did it. And they showed it in slow-mo replay, how hard Okada came down on his neck and his head. I was like, that is just insanity. I mean, don't do that all the time. I understand it's the biggest show of the year, but even for the biggest show of the year, man, that was insane. But those guys put their body on the line in such an incredible fashion for almost 45 minutes, which I'm even surprised they went that long.
Yeah, and from the time it started with, it was funny too, because I mean, you're always comparing, always inevitably, with WWE. So right from the start, and I just think Kenny likes Terminator, but it was Terminator 2, the entrance, which I thought was really cool. And of course, you're comparing that to Triple H, because he had that at WrestleMania 31, I think, right?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Terminator open. And, this match against Sting. And so I thought that was, but right from the beginning, it was just a great match. I thought they took too many risks, but it's easy to say that when everything works out well. I mean, some of those moves, you wondered if Omega would get back up. And I'm not saying that as, I'm not criticizing, but I'm saying it as someone who enjoys watching him wrestle. I mean, is there a point of no return? Like,
right.
I always think back to Bret Hart. And Bret is the, in my opinion at least, in terms of worker. Like, he was just the best. He could make anything look good. He could make anyone look good. And he was safe. And I can't ever remember Bret Hart doing a moonsault, but his matches were dramatic and they were compelling. So I still wonder if we need to put the brakes on sometimes. I say we, like I do it. But people in the business need to put the brakes on, because, like, Kenny Omega, I think even without some of those moves, he's still the best wrestler in the world. But how can you tell a guy to slow down? It's a very hard thing to do.
Especially on a show like that, you know, they're trying to showcase themselves. You know, they're trying to make history. They're trying to set the bar. I mean, even look at some of the simpler stuff that Kenny did. How many knees did he give Okada in the head? I mean, a lot. I mean, there was a lot of knees getting thrown around in that match, too. So there is that level. But at the same time, I get it from those guys. I mean, they've got something to prove. I mean, they got a chip on their shoulder that they want to go out there. And, you know, they want to prove it. I know you wrote in your column that everybody should check out over on SI.com, the Week in Wrestling Weekly column. But you said you were not surprised at all that Kenny Omega lost, that Okada won. And one of the reasons is we've never seen an American except for Lesnar back in 2006. But we typically do not see Americans win, you know, when it comes to the Tokyo Dome show. So I guess you were not surprised at all that Omega lost this match.
I was disappointed, but I wasn't surprised. I honestly thought Tanahashi Naito up till a couple of weeks ago or whenever they made that last announcement. I really thought that was going to be the match to close out the show. And I think Gato and I think the people at New Japan realized that they had to close, which, I mean, you have to close. They haven't always. I think they realized it was in their best judgment to close with the heavyweight championship match. And it just, the only reason I thought that Omega would not win, and I had to be correct, was just looking at the booking of AJ Styles. Styles is more of a name than Omega is right now, just because he was around for so long. I know people kind of was under the radar his TNA run, but he had some sensational stuff in his TNA run with Joe, with Kurt Angle. I mean, he was a known commodity. Where Kenny was a junior heavyweight a year ago, which I guarantee they hold against him. Now, I'm not saying Gato holds it against him or the boys necessarily, but I'm sure out there you don't see juniors in a year jump to heavyweight and become the best heavyweight in the division. So I'm sure it ruffled a lot of feathers. And Kenny openly admitted that he's had a tough year, that a lot of people have rooted for him to fail, which is why, on a personal level, he wanted the Bucks ringside, not so they could, you know, cheat in wrestling terms, but he just said they're his friends, they've had his back, they've been a support system for him, he's tried to be that for them. That's why he wanted them there. So I thought, based off the booking, because I believe it was Wrestle Kingdom 9, Styles wins the belt, I guess I'll check my dates, in that February, immediately after the show. So
yeah, it was that one.
The way they book it in New Japan, you don't see very, very rarely North Americans win the main event or even in the main event, which is amazing what Okada and Omega did. But just based off Styles, the way they booked AJ Styles, he would lose the belt in October. He could win the belt in February, but he would never main event a Wrestle Kingdom. And that's not that. I'm not saying it's wrong. If you look at Vince McMahon's, I don't believe a Japanese wrestler has never made an event to WrestleMania. So it's not like this is anything. And I mean, there's been one African-American world champion in WWE history. Is that correct? Just The Rock. And he's kind of championed as Samoan. It's not like it's any different here, but I just did not think Omega would win. I think he does win the belt, just not on the main show.
Yeah. You know, it's just this weird thing. I mean, when you look at Omega, I mean, there was just so much built up to this match that you really thought, okay, it's Kenny's time. It's Kenny's time. It makes a lot of sense. He's going to win the title here. And then he came very close, but he didn't win it. But it makes sense from a story standpoint of the booking of this guy's still working his way up. Look at this incredible year. He's no longer, you know, a junior heavyweight. He won the G1. He's done stuff we haven't seen before. And he's in a position that people never thought that he would be in. So, you know, he's in a great position right now, and there's still plenty of time going forward. So I guess it does make sense that Okada, you know, ended up, holding on to the title there. And, you know, there's plenty of stuff to come, you know. So, I mean, I like you, agree Omega is probably going to, you know, he's going to win the title this year. At the worst, next year. But he's going to win that title sooner or later. And by the way, congrats on the column from the standpoint that if anybody hasn't read it yet, go read it right now, because Justin has the first comments following the match with both Kenny and with Okada, talking about that match and talking about, especially when it comes to Kenny, how tough this past year was. So kudos to you for getting those. Outside of the top two matches, and the thing that I like about these New Japan shows too, especially when it comes to Wrestle Kingdom, they really build to a crescendo to where typically the best matches are on last, and hopefully the last match is the best. And I think it was in this case, but from some of the other stuff, was there anything else in particular that stood out to you?
Well, I do want to touch on Cody Rhodes, and the great thing about, and this is a compliment, the great thing about New Japan shows in terms of the order, you're never surprised about a match order. You pretty much know the order just based off the hierarchy of the show. But I thought the main event, purely on storyline, and I know it worked out, and I know he became world champion and set a record, you know, record amount of days doing so. But it reminded me he had to overcome this. The only parallel I could draw this morning, in my half you know sleep half awake stage, was Night of Champions 2011, and I thought that CM Punk, and I'm a Punk fan, I'm a Triple H fan, but I thought Punk was white hot at that point in his career, and Triple H beat him, and it just derailed him. It took a while for Punk to get his steam back. The unique thing about the match this morning was Omega looked so strong in defeat, but he still lost. And New Japan is very oriented on wins and losses, which I think it should be. It's based as a sport, sport of champions. I just wonder, and you're a pro sports guy, like when it's time. You can't hold a guy back when he's ready. That's what makes wrestling so unique, because if Steph Curry was scoring 48 points in the NBA D League, well, he'd get pulled up to the pros. If Nakamura is killing in NXT, he's not necessarily going to the main roster. So wrestling's it's a strange dichotomy. But I thought of that Night of Champions match, and I just when it's time to pull the trigger, Brian, you got to pull the trigger.
I agree. I mean, the time that I always remember when it comes to pulling the trigger, and it actually worked out in the company's favor that they didn't, was, God, when was this? Remember when Jeff Hardy was feuding with Umaga at the end of the year, and they had like these great matches, right? And then he faced Randy Orton for the title at the Royal Rumble, and Jeff Hardy was white hot. And everybody's like, they might switch WrestleMania plans, and they might have him beat Orton for the title. And they didn't.
Oh, wait. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, and he didn't. And the next thing you know, Jeff failed for the wellness policy and wasn't even on WrestleMania that year.
When it's time, it's time.
I agree.
When you lose that moment, and that's why I think Omega is champ, but man, and I guarantee you, I cannot speak for Kenny Omega, and I wouldn't, but I'm guessing if you asked him, this was the moment. This was his Daniel Bryan. If he won the title at any other show, really doesn't have the effect, but at WrestleMania 30, man, that was special. Omega as that first foreigner in the main event to win since 06 Brock Lesnar. And there's only, time only moves forward. So I was disappointed in the finish. I wasn't surprised. I liked Cody Rhodes. I liked Juice Robinson. But I think with Cody, I mean, they love Naito. And he sells. He's the number one top merchandise seller for New Japan. So you can't argue that. I think he's great in the ring, too. So there's another guy. That's three top heels for Okada. I assume they want to go with Naito eventually, because that's what they wanted to do originally.
Right.
But what else stuck out? I thought it was funny. They've obviously taken a little bit from WWE. I like how they worked the New Japan Rumble. I mean, I love Billy Gunn, so it's fun to watch him. I love Cheeseburger, the Japanese legends. It was great. A lot of matches. I'm trying to think of what else really stood out on that card. You know what really stood out, and it didn't get necessarily the crowd reaction, probably, though they are familiar with Kyle O'Reilly, the Ring of Honor World title match, and I'm a big fan of both those guys. Very rare, Brian, to see a world title change hands, in the record books.
Yeah.
Kyle O'Reilly will have no title defenses. So that's a bit of a missed opportunity for Ring of Honor and for Kyle.
How strange is that situation? And obviously, we're not privy to everything, but, we had heard a lot about, Riley's contract was up at the end of the year, and we don't know what he was going to do next. But there was a lot of talk about, hey, you know what? Obviously, he's not going to re-sign, or at least re-sign immediately if he loses this match. And obviously he did. It just felt so strange that they built up this long feud that went on for, over a year. And it finally culminates with O'Reilly winning the championship. He finally defeats Adam Cole and he gets that title. And then
a show called Final Battle, no less.
Final battle. Yeah. And then a month later, and no title defenses, he loses the title right back. It was so strange. I mean, I understand they got to protect themselves for the title, but at the same time, why did you put the title on in the first place if you didn't have him re-signed. And like I said, I understand there's negotiations and whatnot. We're not privy to all that. But like, if you can't have that guy re-signed and you know his deal is coming up here, I don't know if I would have put the belt on him in the first place.
And it shows you what a breakdown there was. Because I assume you put the title on him on December 2nd. His contract was up to 31st. They must have thought they'd have it figured out by then. And I'm sure that they... I think the Cole move was a late change. I don't think they expected Adam Cole to be a month ago that Cole would, 33 days ago when O'Reilly won, that Cole would be world champion in a month again. I think it's great, though, that he's the first ever Ring of Honor three-time champ. But, yeah, clearly negotiations have not gone well. And the sad thing, too, speaking of timing, like Kyle had a cool moment at the Manhattan Center. I was at that show in December. It would have been fun to see where he built from there. Bobby Fish was talking about getting a match. It would have been so much fun to see. Those two very rarely go head-to-head. That would have been a fun feud. So now does he win the title back? Is he in the doghouse at Ring of Honor because he didn't sign, he lost the belt? Can he regain some of that momentum? Does he even come back? I don't know. And I'm surprised. You know, we're a little – I'm in my 30s. I know we're peers of age. And I thought back to the Monday Night Wars era. And it would have been so much fun because you would have – had Kyle on a different show with that belt. So you would have had him someplace else, and obviously times have changed, but it's too bad. I mean, it's a missed opportunity for Ring of Honor. It's a missed opportunity for Kyle O'Reilly. However, it's an opportunity for Adam Cole.
There's a lot of stuff going on there when it comes to talent, too, because, I mean, we don't believe O'Reilly is necessarily gone. I'd always heard, no matter what, he was going to be at the tapings, the next Ring of Honor TV tapings, which are January 14th. And I don't know if he's going to be there beyond that. I don't know. I mean, we've seen plenty of guys like sign with another company, but then not start there and for, you know, a couple of months, whether it's NXT or someplace else. But there's some guys there that they got to get shored up that, you know, in WWE's in aggressive mode. I mean, we're talking about Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish. We're talking about, you know, Adam Cole's contract comes up here in a few months, and he's always been rumored to go in there. I mean, WWE is... I believe they wanted him for a couple of years. It's just Adam has said, hey, I've got unfinished business. I want to keep, you know, improving here in Ring of Honor and on the Indies, and I want to go to Japan. So, I mean, I think Donovan Dijak is up. Adam Page is up as well, which nobody really talks about. So, I mean, there's a lot of guys in Ring of Honor that, you know, we got to see what's going on with their future. And in the meantime, they might still be working there, but they're not. You know, they're not locked up to deals. I mean, they locked up the Young Bucks, which is a very good move. They locked up Jay Lethal, which is another good move, even though I'd like to see what's next for Jay, because I think he needs to change a little bit and freshen up. But, you know, there's a lot of guys that are in flux right now. And, you know, Ring of Honor's got to figure this out and see if they can keep guys or, you know, which guys they might lose and who exactly WWE is going after and going after the hardest.
And it hurt, I think. Even though they're both very good on their own, I think it hurts Kyle O'Reilly that Bobby Fish just re-signed. And they're so great because they can work together. They can work individually. But, you know, Red Dragon, I think, is so good together. It's nice to always have that in your back pocket. We can always team these guys. They can always do something. They can always work together. So it's tough when if Kyle's going to go. But why wouldn't NXT want a Kyle O'Reilly? He's sensational in the ring. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. His work rate's really good. He's good on the mic. He's intense. He's different than a lot of guys NXT has. I'm sure New Japan could use him full time. I don't know if he'd want to relocate that far, but
right.
Has a lot of, and it's tough too because it was a great, and I thought it was very, very good. Vice did a great story online about the Young Bucks.
Yeah.
And one of the Ring of Honor executives said that it was the largest deal they signed, and the Bucks deserve it, and the Bucks are sensational. However, if you're Kyle O'Reilly, or you're Bobby Fish, or you're anybody on that's a hard working, talented roster, and you see that, and that's great that they're spending money, but if you're, you know, it's just like management in pro sports or anywhere, really. But if you know they're spending money, but then they're trying to tighten up the purse strings on you, I could see why there'd be some frustration. And Kyle's your world champ, or was still a few hours ago your world champion, so I'm sure he wanted to be paid like it, and clearly there's some issues with negotiations.
And Bobby, you know, I wasn't sure if he was going to re-sign or what was going to go on there, because there was a lot of talk about, you know, he wasn't thrilled the way that he was booked over the last year. And I mean, this is just hearsay that's out there. Maybe it's not true, but I there have been a lot of talk about that. And there was a lot of conversation about, hey, man, he's 39. He's almost 40. You know, if he's going to go to NXT, now would be the time. You know, I think that the conversation was him and Kyle going together. And obviously, that's not going to happen now because Bobby resigned. So he's staying. I mean, Kyle, we don't know what's going on yet. So I guess we'll see, you know, in the coming weeks what's going on there. It's just, you know, it's funny, too, because we talk about all these different guys from Ring of Honor and you know, and what could be going on there. I'm not going to be surprised if there's some guys maybe in New Japan that we're not even thinking of that maybe WWE is going after.
Yeah, clearly there won't be the exodus like that New Japan four last year with Gallows, Anderson, Styles, and Nakamura. But it's going to be a little more staggered this year. I think that Cole, my opinion is, he does go to WWE or NXT, and he can kind of replace Nakamura or Rude, depending on which way they want to go.
Right.
But Steve Corino, but that's going to be a behind-the-scenes thing, more coaching. But it'll be interesting to see, yeah, who else they're looking at. I'm sure they were looking at Kenny, who just resigned. I think it's crazy if they weren't looking at the Bucks, but
they just resigned.
And they just resigned, right? I think it's in 2 years too. I think it's the best thing though, ultimately, for Adam to win this third title, this Ring of Honor World title. I think in wrestling, and I would put myself in this category, we're always looking forward. What's going to happen next? What does this mean? How does this, you know, what does this match mean in the long term? Where sometimes, Brian, like this morning, I had to remind myself just to enjoy the moment. You know, so much fun to watch that match in the moment. And we'll never get that moment back, but it was so special at the time.
Yeah.
And that's why with Adam Cole, instead of, like, I'm tired, and I'm going to write about it next week, but I'm tired of us always looking forward, not enjoying the present, and I'm not excusing myself. But with Adam Cole, let's enjoy his third title run. It's probably his last one, Ring of Honor. So now we know we have it. Like, enjoy these matches. Enjoy when he cuts these promos. And I don't know, I could guess, and you could too, who he's going to open with for his last couple programs. But I think they're going to be creative with that. I just think with contracts, it's so up in the air.
And
I'm excited to watch and just enjoy the moment.
Me too, you know. And you know what the funny thing is I know WWE has had a lot of interest in Adam. I don't think it's 100% that he goes. I agree with you. I think he does. But I don't think it's written in stone. And I'm going to be curious to see what happens coming up here. But I agree that there are times it's like, I know we all want to be in the know. We all want to sit there and go, oh, what? You know, hey, they're going after this guy and they're going to sign this guy and they could do this. Or what are they going to do with that? How is he going to, you know, work in a place like this? And will he excel? And if he goes to NXT, how long will we be there? Will he go to the main roster? I mean, there are moments where it's just like, hey, this guy's doing work right now. You know, let's enjoy the moment. Let's see what happens, you know, and hopefully everything works out for him. And we, you know, we all benefit because we get to see some good stuff. So you mentioned Nakamura and you mentioned Bobby Roode. I know that I wrote this predictions column recently and I said both Joe and Nakamura are going to be called up this year. And I think Nakamura will be later in the year. I think Joe could be at the Rumble. Who knows? We'll see coming up here. It makes sense now that he lost the title and he lost the rematch. But I came so close to writing that I think Nakamura might spend the entire year in NXT because he is the biggest name in that brand. And, you know, you might want to call it developmental, but at the same time, they tour, they're selling tickets. They've got name value with it. They do four big shows a year and they need a star to go with it. And I kind of wonder, I mean, I don't want to see it happen. I want to see Nakamura get moved up, but I kind of wonder if maybe they're going to keep him in NXT for the entire year.
He'll be there. You're absolutely right. He'll be there until he's replaceable.
Right.
When is he replaceable? The next big star comes. And if it's Adam Cole, it won't be for a few months because they're going to need to build him up. And he's probably going to be a heel there, you would imagine.
Yeah.
I agree. He is there. I think Joe's at the Rumble as well. But I think that Nakamura is with NXT, just like Finn Balor was, until they have a ready-made replacement. And right now they don't. And until they do, he'll be there. I agree. But it's funny. I contradict myself. I say, let's enjoy the moment. But I'm looking through my notes from this morning, the Adam Cole Kyle O'Reilly match, and the name I kept writing down time and again was Will Ospreay. Like, if Cole does leave, even if he doesn't, that's the feud I want. I want to see Ring of Honor go in a totally different direction. I want to see Ospreay win the world title at Ring of Honor. I want to see him carry that company. And if he fails, then he fails. But, like, that's WWE doesn't have a Will Ospreay. He is so good. Plus, there's a tailor-made story. He hasn't, you know, the last three big matches, big money matches, he's lost to Marty Scurll. So you have an easy opponent there. He hasn't beat him. But that's, I say let's not look too far forward, and here I am looking, you know, into April, May, and June. But, man, what a great opportunity Ring of Honor has with some of their young talent, like Ospreay, who was actually on the card this morning, too. That's the guy I want as their next world champ. But I agree. Ring of Honor, NXT will have a Nakamura showcase till your place. Speaking of your predictions, Colin Brian, I did have one question, one follow-up.
Okay.
Do you really think Cena's back in 2017? I still think we see a part-time Cena.
Oh, I agree. I think we're going to see more of them than we did last year, simply because, the injury situation, as long as he stays healthy, I think we'll see more. I don't think we're going to see 12-month Cena, but I think we could see an 8-month Cena, because I think he's done a couple of movies, but they're already in the can. So, and you never know what's going to be coming around the corner, but I think we're going to see a lot more of them this year than we did last year. I think like 7, maybe 8 months. And he'll take his, spots here and there to take time off and go do other projects. But he'll be around more. I can see that still.
That's a win, in my opinion. If you can get 7 months, get 8, even better. But if WWE gets 7 months out of John Cena, 8 months out of him, I mean, that's what a huge coup for them in 2017. I thought a couple of your predictions, if I'm remembering correctly. Last night, I actually was thinking about watching SmackDown. And I had to kind of pause myself and say, because, again, I was not anti-Miz for so long. But
no.
I thought he was shoved down his throat for a while. But, man, he is so good right now. I wouldn't be surprised if one of your predictions was he'd win the world title in the upcoming year.
Yeah.
And I don't like saying I agree with this, but I have to, because you're right. Roman Reigns, if people haven't heard the call, it's very good. It's a predictions call. Roman Reigns will have an extended run as Universal Champion. I'm not saying I want it to happen. I'd love it to be as a heel, but I feel like some of these last Raw, like the last Raw to end the year, the first to start, we're seeing a lot of the same stuff with a lot of the same people. We're seeing a lot of Roman Reigns, who's still good, but we're seeing a lot of them. We're seeing too much Seth Rollins. His character's still undefined. We're seeing a lot of Jericho and Owens and a lot of comedy. It's like we're seeing a lot of the same stuff. So, but I agree. I do think I thought you had a nice call there, and I do think your predictions, a lot of them will ring true.
Well, I start thinking about it when it comes to Reigns, and he's been the champion on 3 different occasions, but it was just like he's never had a long run. And his longest run is 77 days. And then the other ones are much shorter than that, including one that's only one day. And I was originally going to write, like, I think they're going to keep the title off of him until the summer. And then I started thinking about going, okay, moron, that's not going to happen. I mean, come on. I mean, they've invested so much in this guy, and we're seeing more of him on TV, like you said, and it is mania season. So we could sit here and we can flesh out all of our fantasy booking. You know, that's all fine and dandy as a fan. But at the same time, I'm writing this prediction column. I'm trying to write stuff that I think is really going to happen. And I thought, you know what? I think they're going to put the title on him. I think he's going to hold on to it for a while. And then, around SummerSlam, sometime around then, that might be the time where he loses it, maybe even a little bit longer. You know, we'll see where they take it, if they go in that direction. I'd be fine with him holding the title that long if they would actually do a heel turn with him. But I'm not convinced that they want to do that, or they will do it.
I don't think so either. Here's a question for you. I'll turn the tables and ask you some questions, Brian.
Okay.
Why is Roman Reigns United States champion? He's already in the main event next year. And if you added that title into a feud that could use a breath of fresh air, some air, some revitalization, with Rusev and Enzo and Cass, that feud would be so much fun with the U.S. belt. And you could have that involved. Why is Roman Reigns? It is mind-boggling that he is U.S. champion.
I agree. I think, and he's barely even defended it too, which is kind of crazy. I think it pigeonholes them too much for the plans that they have, because if they do go the way that I think they're going to, and that's he's going to win the world championship, whether it be at the Rumble or at Mania and hold it for a while, they got to figure out what they're going to do with that U.S. title. And I don't think they should have ever put it on him in the first place. I think they were like, we just want to establish him as, he is, a really high up on the ladder guy here. So just to enforce that, we're going to put the title on him, but he's really defended that. And I know it's a wrestling championship and we can say what we want about those, but for that title in particular, you have to point that out, because it wasn't that long ago where John Cena went out of his way to defend that thing on TV every week and had incredible matches, and he built that thing up. And then you look what they've done with the U.S. title since then, it's back in the wasteland. So It makes no sense. I think it puts him in kind of a corner from a standpoint of what they're going to do with that title and putting it on him, and they got to figure something out. It's like an extra layer of something that they have to figure out. So let me ask you this too, when it comes to Roman, okay? Because I know you wrote your predictions thing as well for the Royal Rumble in the column today, and you believe Finn Balor is coming back and he is going to win the Rumble. And then you took it another step further by saying you think Balor is going to challenge AJ Styles on SmackDown for the World Championship, which also means AJ beats Cena in their match at the Rumble. So there's a lot to unpack there, but when it comes to Roman, where do you think Roman fits in all this, and does he win the title for the Raw brand? Because I believe he is actually going to win it. I don't want to see it because I think there's different directions they could go that would benefit everybody better, but I think Roman's going to win the title at the Rumble.
It's a matter of time. I think that the Mania, I don't know. I think that they're bound to do a Reigns, Jericho, Owens triple threat. And I still think, as an appropriate send-off, and this is not the send-off business, it's the pro wrestling business, I get it, but Chris Jericho, he's earned, he's so popular, he's still very effective in the ring. He should be world champion. I imagine they have Reigns defeat Jericho, and that's how you get the belt on Reigns as Universal Champion. Just to put a bow on the United States title, I don't know if you remember, it was early 90s, like 93, when the Quebecers beat the Steiners for the tag titles.
Mm-hmm.
I thought of that match on Raw when it was Jericho-Reigns, where the belt would change hands. The U.S. title would change hands on a DQ, which is such a great out. Reigns doesn't need to get pinned. Jericho is a heel. He can heel his way into the belt. And the Quebecers did that against the Steiners 23 years ago. And they won by DQ, won the belt. And what an easy out. And Reigns still spears him and wins. I was so frustrated. But I do think that Reigns, I don't know. Do they hold off till Mania? Maybe. I don't know. But I think it's a triple threat match at Mania with those three, because you need to vary your main events. I do think, and I thought they played their hand a little bit too much on Raw with Cena. On SmackDown. Cena cut this tremendous promo after Styles got arguably a better promo, and it was blurring the lines. They both did a great job, and then Baron Corbin came out, and I don't know.
It didn't fit.
I didn't like that one bit. Like, let's put the focus be Styles Cena. That's a mega match. I know you've seen it before, but that's a huge match. These guys haven't touched really since SummerSlam. Let's let them have their own moment. And I don't know if Corbin costs Cena the match or gets involved. Like, I want to see Styles win clean again. I don't think that's going to happen. But I thought during the promo, wow, what a great swerve it would be. Yeah, Styles keep the belt, and then Corbin got involved, and maybe they're going Cena-Corbin. I'm not sure. I still imagine they're going Cena-Taker, but it's strange that the Taker thing is mind-boggling too. He comes back before Survivor Series on SmackDown, said he's back, you know, digging holes and taking souls. We haven't seen or heard from him since. Now he's back on Raw in a week. It's like, I know they need a rating, but
it's
no
strange. I think when it comes to Corbin, I think what they're trying to do with Corbin is they're trying to put him in that mix so that way he challenges Cena after WrestleMania for the title.
I guess maybe my Styles colored glasses doesn't want to agree with you as much sense as it
does. Oh, trust me. I agree with you, because I'm sitting there and, you know, we're trying to squeeze everything together and figure it out. Like, my buddy Michael Wiseman, who's on the podcast with me typically, he had this idea that he said, well, what if Owens actually retained the title, but Jericho won the Royal Rumble? And we saw that little tease on Raw this past week where, yeah, you know, Owens is like, what do you mean you're in the Rumble? Yeah, this is our belt, you know, and then you don't need to do that. So he had it that way, because that would set up the Jericho Owens, and then you could still do Roman against Braun Strowman, but for the U.S. title, which that's the route I'd prefer to see, quite honestly. But I don't think that they're going to do that. I think they want Roman to have the title. It makes sense from a standpoint of, you've got Jericho in this cage. He tries to slip a weapon to Ken, you know, to Kevin in the middle of the match. It backfires. Roman wins. And, you know, Jericho and Kevin are really ticked off at each other over that. So that continues that. I'm going to be very curious if that's the route they go. Where do they fit Braun Strowman in all of this? I mean, would they really do, if Roman was a world champion, would they really do Roman Reigns versus Braun Strowman at WrestleMania? And I like what they're doing with Braun. He's getting better, but I still think they put him in a bad position by bringing him up when they did. If they do that match, they're putting both of those guys in a bad position just because of the crowd reaction and expectations. And you're talking about a world championship match now and whatnot. And that can really hurt those guys. You know, it's nothing against them because I know they're going to be working hard, but you can only do with what you're given. And, you know, that's a really tough spot if that's where they go with Strowman.
And the question for me is, how do you make Strowman look good? Like, that's the only, how do you make Reigns look good?
Right.
All your guys, well, you make Reigns look good by like a triple threat type match or working with guys like Owens and Jericho. He's going to look good. They're just too good. You know, that's why with Corbin, people really complimented him after the Styles Ziggler three-way match last week on SmackDown. Well, I mean, Brian, with all due respect, and you and I are not thoroughbred athletes, maybe not us, but somebody else would have looked good in that match too. You're working with AJ Styles and Dolph Ziggler. Anybody could look good, and those are the two of the best, arguably, in the world. You're going to look good. The wrestling's about who you're working with.
Right.
So the only way I would make Strowman look good, I don't know what you do with the Rumble. You cannot have him win. But I would have him win the Andre the Giant Battle Royal. I think that's because one-on-one, do the Sami Zayn thing. I think we're coming to a close on that. I would have, maybe he can beat Zayn last in the Andre the Giant Battle Royal. But I would go that direction. Make him that monster. Make it mean something. And then continue the slow build from there. I was disappointed, not this Monday, but last week on Raw, we saw Strowman in like five different segments. Too much. Less is more with these guys, which is tough on a three-hour show when your cruisers aren't over, when you've got spots to fill, and he's popular. The temptation is to go back to what works. But you got to, less is more in some cases. I want to see less of these guys because I want to see them more. And that's a hard thing to do when you're trying to pop a rating.
Right.
You're trying to get people to tune in and buy network subscriptions. But, you know, it's funny, the best booking, I think, Vince McMahon, you know, on both ends, too, though Hogan was great in WCW. I always go back to Hulk Hogan. The way only Vince McMahon, the only guy that could ever do it, the way he booked Hulk Hogan, you never saw too much of him. You never got, I mean, maybe the mid-80s, you saw a little bit too much of him. But, man, Vince just knew how to use Hulk. You never got tired of the guy. It was always a special occasion. I suppose for a different set of circumstances, it's kind of the same with Brock Lesnar, partially because Brock doesn't want to be there all the time. But Vince knows how to book his stars very well. I hope they get that with Strowman. I don't want to see Strowman in a singles match. I definitely don't want to see Strowman against Roman Reigns in a singles match at WrestleMania.
Well, I'll say this. That makes a lot of sense if you talk about with Strowman. It's kind of like what they do with Baron Corbin on the other brand. You're heating him up now, but it's not for a big WrestleMania match. Like, he could be in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. He could win that. And then afterwards is when he could challenge for the title. But, you know, doing a three-way between Jericho and Owens and Reigns, there's a lot that they could do with that. So maybe that is a better route that they go in. Plus, they know, like, hey, it's WrestleMania, you know, and Braun is still, you know, he's still limited. He's still very green, you know, and people are still getting used to the character. So, you know, why do that? We've got enough. We can do these other matches, and then we can do stuff with something even bigger with Braun afterwards if that's the direction that they want to go. I always believe, and I know you think that AJ is going to beat Cena, and I don't, but I think AJ, if he loses this match with Cena, I'm very curious to see what they do with him for Mania, because you're talking about a guy that's been a long-running world champion. He needs to be in one of your top matches on that show, or at least I would think he would. And if he's not the champion, and if he's not defending a championship on that show, where do they factor him in?
Particularly on the SmackDown brand, that is, I mean,
I mean, is that where a Samoa Joe comes in? Or somebody even mentioned this, like, is that where a Shane McMahon would fit in?
I think we've seen the last of Shane after.
I hope so.
It's fun to see Shane after. You know, yeah. The scene is back. I mean, to me, Shane was fun because he was gone for a while. And he had to because Cena was hurt. They made the best of a kind of a tough situation. But yeah, that's a great question. If Styles were to lose the belt at the Rumble, what do you do with the Mania? And that's a hard question because the roster is so thin on SmackDown. I don't know what's happening with the Intercontinental title by Mania. I suppose you could throw him in that mix. But AJ Styles is a world title guy. I'm partially disappointed, too. I love Ambrose with the IC title. I don't know. Part of me wishes that he stayed and muddied that main event picture. that he stayed that thorn in AJ's side. I don't know. I'm not in love with Dean Ambrose as the Intercontinental Champion, but I love the work. We're jumping around. I love what The Miz has done. Every week, I want to listen to his interviews. And it makes me want to watch his matches. The matches aren't out of this world, but geez, Mike is so smart in the ring. He's a fun guy to watch. He's another guy in the Wrestling Tribune today. It's funny, he got singled out, as well as John Cena, by Disco Inferno, by Glenn. And he said, those are the guys you should watch. Like, they don't get injured, by and large. They're really smart in what they do. But like every feud Miz has been in, even the Daniel Bryan one, they haven't even touched. They're all compelling. So it's something to be said for that side, too. Then you get Styles, the best worker in the world, who continues to get better on the mic. What do you do with him at Mania if he's not champion, Bryan? That's a great question.
I don't know. You know, it's funny when you talk about Miz and we talk about SmackDown, which I think has been the better show. It's not even just SmackDown, because they're starting to blur the lines a little bit more with reality on that show. And I like what they're doing there, because they're taking real life situations and they're not going too far with it for the most part. It's funny because on Raw, sometimes they try to do that, but I think it's manufactured things. On SmackDown, that's not. And then on top of that, on SmackDown, you get the extension with Talking Smack, where they do some good stuff on there. I mean, when they allow guys to go out there and say, hey, go on Talking Smack for 5 minutes and do what you want to do. We're giving you the opportunity. Nothing is scripted. Go out there and do what you want to do. And, you know, The Miz is beyond annoying on there sometimes, but he's doing Miz stuff. Baron Corbin, you know, we could say we want. I think he's done pretty well on that. Alexa Bliss did really good on there. AJ Styles, when he's on there, is really fun. Cena is the rare times that he's on there, but when he is, man, it's like newsworthy things when he's on that show. Yeah. So I think they've done a lot with that Talking Smack show. I hate that it's not now. It's on an hour later after 205 live. It's brutal.
I 100% agree. It's just the timing's thrown off. I love the consistency of the show ending, and I don't know how you fix that, but Ryan, it's such a frustration in the Barrasso household when I'm watching SmackDown. It ends. I want to get right into Talking Smack. You're right about Cena though. When Cena's on, and I. You know, I'm a huge Daniel Bryan fan. When Cena's on, he brings out another gear. Maybe just because Bryan's like the little brother, but
Daniel Bryan is not afraid to ask certain questions to Cena, and he'll be very upfront about it. Same with JBL. JBL will do the same thing, because JBL's just like, I don't care. But Daniel Bryan, you could see that his mind is always working, like the motor's always running, and he's just like, okay, what am I? And he'll just open it up, and he's not worried about any kind of repercussions. I mean, if you saw this week on the show, he had this long comment about part-timers working WrestleMania, and it was fascinating.
I think that those topics, it's funny, he's at the point where, and this is not a bad, it's not that he doesn't care in the sense that, like, he doesn't want his work to be good, but when that's why I think Foley and Bryan are the best two guys for the job. They both care so much about the younger talent, which is hard, and it's almost great that they can't wrestle anymore in that sense, because they're not putting themselves over. And I mean, they could do pretty much anything they wanted and still get cheered. They're so beloved. But the great thing is when Cena's on, he brings out another gear in Bryan, because Bryan sticks up for the guys who get overlooked, who are working indie shows. And Cena said, well, when you're not, you know, back this summer to Styles, when you leave here, you're going to go wrestle somewhere else. I'm staying here. And Bryan got in his face on the show and said, that's because you can stay here. We love wrestling and we're wrestlers. We're going to wrestle someplace else. Like, that's Daniel Bryan. I mean, the wrestling can't get enough Daniel Bryan. And I love Mick Foley, too. You know, I know he's had some health issues. He looks great. But I just think it's so much fun that those are our two general managers.
Oh.
Those are our commissioners. Those are the right two guys to do it.
I agree. I just hope, because we know that they've had ups and downs in the past with their feelings about Mick, that I hope Mick stays in that role for a while, because it's one of those where if there was one of them, they said, hey, you know, we feel like making a change, you know, and Mick Foley, you know, I mean, you can feel like, and I think Mick knows it too. Like, he's going to cherish the time while he's there. He enjoys it, but he also knows, like, you never know when somebody's mind is going to change. And 1 week you're on the show and the next you're not.
I agree. And I kind of felt bad reading Foley's post on Facebook last week. Not that we've talked a million different shows. We've texted in the past. Not to ever pretend we're friends, but Foley's always been very respectful, and I've got a lot. Mick Foley will forget more about the wrestling than I'll learn. I mean, he's a fountain of knowledge. But it's funny that, like, I don't know, wouldn't you want to, he said he's on a handshake deal. wouldn't you want to lock that guy up in that role? I think he's so good.
I agree.
And I think it's for a couple of reasons. It's important because he's not working, so he would never try to steal someone's spot. He's trying to put guys over, including the women and the cruisers. But also, Brian has it easier working with Shane McMahon in the sense they're both faces. You know, they're both protagonists. It's tough for Mick when he's working with an antagonist in Stephanie. I think he makes Stephanie look like a not that she doesn't need the help, but he makes Stephanie look even better. And it's a Mick's got a weird situation where he's working with his heel boss, he's over with the crowd, he kind of appeases both sides. You know, I guess he's preaching to the choir because I love everything Mick Foley does, writing and talking and anything wrestling wise. But I can't think of a better guy. I know Kurt Angle said he would be willing to do that job. I think Mick's perfect.
I agree. I love Mick in that role. And you know, people can identify with him in that role as well. So I think it works out really, really good for him. And I don't want to see that change. So let me ask you this, too, when it comes to the Rumble, because we keep dancing around it. So in all these different scenarios, I think when it comes to the Royal Rumble, it's going to be one of the more star-studded affairs for the actual Rumble match. When you're talking about big names, I still think, though, despite all the big names that will be in it, it's going to be a very limited pool on who we could really see win it, because, you know, Lesnar and Goldberg are going to be in that match. I don't think either of those guys are going to win it. We don't know. You know, Roman Reigns probably is not going to be in that match. I almost wonder if AJ Styles loses the title, would they put AJ in the Royal Rumble? But I mean, we're going to see other guys in it. You know, Undertaker's expected to be in it. And we'll see some other guys, you know, coming up here. Who do you think is actually going to win the Rumble match?
I still think it's Finn Balor, but you're right, though. The list of candidates who actually can win. I mean, there's going to be a lot of big names. There'll be, you know, 10 big names. I'm actually really excited for the final 10, for the final six and the final four.
Yeah.
They could have a star-studded final four. I don't think Lesnar and Goldberg go to the final four, but if you did, if you had a final four and half of those guys were Bill Goldberg and Brock Lesnar, well, that's great. You could have Dean Ambrose there. You could have Seth Rollins there. You could, and I hope they're not getting along. There's still no continuity in the storyline. Why 2/3 of the Shield, you know, the two it includes Rollins and Reigns. Why would they ever get along? I know they have common enemies, storyline wise. But yeah, there's a lot of great names that can make for an interesting Rumble. But based off what we know, like if Balor's back, I think he wins. But who else really? Again, it's a small list of guys. I'm not in the camp that thinks Braun Strowman will win the Rumble. I just don't believe it'll happen.
I think Undertaker's going to win it.
Do you really?
Yeah. I think Taker's going to come back and say, hey, man, I got one more match left in me. I've got a limited amount of time. And guess what? I'm going to leave with the belt. Yeah, I think they're going to go with Taker.
Interesting. The only reason I personally caution against that, but I'm curious to see what happens, just the way Vince is booked forever. Like, Vince isn't necessarily a world title guy in the sense that he knows what sells without the belt. And maybe in wrestling history, maybe.
Right.
Well, Undertaker is the most over guy without a world title. But it would be interesting at the end if they decide to go that direction. That's the only reason I feel like Taker wouldn't be. But what a great match. I know we all talk about Cena and Taker. If you wanted to make the Undertaker look good, legitimately look good, and he's a guy with a lot of miles on those tires, you want to make Taker look, let's say, great, who would he be great with?
AJ Styles.
AJ Styles.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's the guy. So, I mean, that's I don't know how you pull it off, but, like, Styles would make Taker look better than Cena. There's no doubt in my mind.
See, I think my thinking is because they haven't built it up lately as much, but there's always those threads about Cena trying to tie Flair's record. So I thought Cena would win the title and then Taker would get the title match and say, hey, man, you want to be the man. Yeah, you might have all those title reigns, but you haven't faced me at WrestleMania. You know, you haven't faced me on the show, and they could set up that way. Now, I will say this, though. You can do Undertaker and Cena and you don't need the title. There is a story you can go with it if you want, but you don't have to. I mean, Taker can say, hey, man, this is my final one. But you know what? I've never faced you, Cena, at WrestleMania. And I'm not leaving before That happens. So we're going to do it this year, and I'm going to see if I'll go out on high. You know, I'm not just walking off in the sunset on my laurels. I'm going to do it by taking on and beating the top guy.
I just don't want to see anything Taker. I want to see, I mean, I'd even watch him with Dolph Ziggler. I'd watch him with Sami Zayn. I don't want those matches of Mania, but I don't want to see Taker Braun Strowman either.
Oh, God, don't even say that. That's horrible. There was some talk about Taker versus Roman Reigns, and like, I don't really want to see that.
Again, the goal isn't, it's fun with the weekly column. One of the things I love doing, we do the Nitro Files with Eric Bischoff, and Bischoff looks back at a moment from Nitro. And one of the things I think is really understated about Eric, looking back at his history, particularly as an executive, especially as an executive at WCW, was the way we just did a piece this week about the WCW hotline. It's a very, very quick piece. I thought it was interesting to learn that Gene Okerlund actually was making money off the hotline, so that's why he was so invested in it. And he requested that worked into his contract. That was a big deal for Gene, who was an extra source of income. But I just thought it was interesting. And I'm not knocking Vince Russo. I think Vince Russo did a lot of great things in wrestling, too. But I'll always remember they made Gene, during the Russo era, like a dirty old man on the broadcast. Do you remember that?
Yes, totally.
And, I mean, who looks good doing that, right? Like, everybody looked bad. The women it was uncomfortable for on camera, storyline-wise. For Gene, it didn't make a legendary broadcaster. Maybe the best at his field ever in wrestling. Maybe. I mean, I'm a big Gene Okerlund fan. But it made him look bad. It made everybody look bad. Or if you look at Bischoff, now it failed with some guys. Like, it didn't work with Brett, and it didn't work with everybody. One thing I thought Eric did very well is they enhanced guys. When they brought guys in, they didn't make them look second rate, especially during that hot run. They made guys really look strong. And isn't that the point? Like, put guys together that they have to match. They have to mix well. Like, Roman and Taker, same thing there. Oh, I just think the crowd would be anti-Roman.
Yep.
And then you're making Taker do, you're making him play a position that at his age he can't do anymore. So put him with, especially, it's even more mind-boggling because you look at his best matches, and there's no Shawn Michaels, for sure. But you've got AJ Styles, who's the closest thing we've seen to Shawn Michaels since Shawn Michaels. I mean, that's a Mania match. That's perfect. And I'm sure AJ Styles wouldn't mind doing the honors. He's crazy otherwise. Wouldn't mind doing the honors to The Undertaker at WrestleMania 33. I can't imagine that being an issue. You've got a great, maybe an all-time classic on your hands. Why don't we grasp it? Cena, too. Cena would be a great match, too.
I agree. You know, I mean, I'd love to see something with Styles. I just hope that Styles gets a really, really big match on the show, because you go back to last year, and he'll even say it. I mean, he said it multiple times. He said it to me, he said it to other people about he didn't know what to expect when he came out for the Rumble. And then he got that huge pop, and you look at the position that they have put him in. It's been beyond expectations, and he's proven to everybody, like, hey, not only do I believe I'm the best wrestler in the world, I've been going out there, and I've been showing it, and on top of that, I could talk a hell of a lot better than anybody ever thought. I mean, we've never seen this level of AJ Styles talking. I'll always say that the best thing that ever happened to him were those couple years in New Japan, because he was given a new lease on his career. He was given a new kind of freedom to explore things, to try things, to be put in a certain position, and to get his confidence. Not that his confidence is ever back, but to put him over there and immediately put him in that top position and just say, hey, we know you're a confident dude, but here's another confidence booster. And just let him have that run there, I think, has propelled him to where he is now. And he's so damn good. I mean, I just can't imagine AJ in one of the top, you know, three or four matches, you know, on that show. And I don't know. We'll see exactly how it pairs out. Before we wrap up out of here, since we are starting the new year, how would you characterize or how would you describe 2016 when it came to wrestling? Do you think it was a good year?
A good year. Yeah, it was good. It was like watching Raw every week. It's good. And it's good because of the talent involved. The guy, the wrestlers, the women and the men wrestling, they've never been better. Now, that doesn't mean I'm in love with the product. It's not great. And why isn't it great? It's because wrestling's about moments, not just about matches. So the talent level, the talent work rate, however you define that, has never been higher. You have more athleticism. Guys are just capable of doing so much more. But the moments aren't there. It's the product, and this is no fault of anyone on the working roster, part-timers included. It's one of the reasons part-timers get over so well. We're oversaturated with the product. There's too much wrestling. I mean, if you watch a pay-per-view Sunday and a Raw Monday, that's 6 hours, right? If you, if, same thing with SmackDown. It's 5 hours on a Sunday and a Tuesday. It's just too much, and we're trending in a direction where there's only going to be more. And I know JBL, after Raw on Monday, defended the three-hour Raw.
So did Paul Heyman. Paul Heyman went after Peter Rosenberg on that show.
Yeah, he did. It was fun to watch. I thought they all came off looking good. But in and of itself, in a bubble, a three-hour Raw is great, right? 3 hours of talent. But then you add in so much more content. It's not just that the pay-per-view. You know, it's one thing, too. If we just had three-hour Raws and we had limited pay-per-views, well, that's different, right? But you're going on a monthly show. Some of these monthly shows, Brian, and I consider myself pretty dedicated and devoted. A, because I like it. And B, you know, I'm writing a story every week. I never want to let down people reading the stories. I want to know my stuff. But some of these shows, like, they've had no build. They've had very little excitement. And they're still good shows. And why are they good shows? These guys are so talented. The roster is so talented. They can't help but flourish to a point. But in wrestling, you have good matches. We're ready to move on. You need good characters. I mean, nobody can tell me a great match from the Hardys on Total Nonstop Deletion. But if you watched, you'll remember the show. Why? Because Matt Hardy's got a phenomenal character. But it wasn't the match per se. Now, he could have a great match, but that's not why we tuned in necessarily. That's like icing on the cake. You need the characters. But again, it's really hard for these guys. They're just fighting an uphill battle with so much content. I don't know how it's going to change. It was a good year. It was far from great.
You know what the funny thing is like, I understand their motto of like more bang for the buck when it comes to the WWE network. And I understand that they've got, the costs that come with it and whatnot. But I do wonder when it comes to all the secondary content that's on there, whether it's the new show that was on Monday night or Drive Along or all these different things. And I'm not saying you get rid of all of them, but I do wonder the cost that go into some of those shows, and if they scrap like half of those shows, would it really affect the bottom line of the WWE network when it came to subscriptions? Because that's the bottom line, is just getting people to subscribe. I don't know how many people are subscribing for those events. I mean, sometimes you see the numbers for what's being most watched, and it's like, okay, when they have a pay-per-view, they're watching NXT. Like if Stone Cold or somebody does a podcast on there, which, by the way, been a while since that's happened. But, you know, when they do that stuff, that's the stuff that gets the clicks. You know, it's great you got all these other content, but, man, they have so much on there. It's overwhelming to a certain extent, like you said. And that's just the extra content on top of, if you want to be a good wrestling fan that keeps up with WWE alone with a pay-per-view and a Raw and SmackDown sometimes, that could be twice a month where you're doing that. And that's 8 hours in 3 days just of WWE.
That's a month's worth, you know. That's
right.
And a lot of these times, you can't have. It's like the fourth quarter in the NBA. You can't play four quarters. You can't play that style just because, you know, there's ebbs and flows. Moments are special. They are special. You can't make every show every month must see. It's just too much content. So you got to pick when you have your big shows: your SummerSlam, your WrestleMania, of course. My personal favorite is the Royal Rumble. So you have your big moments. So you're asking, and I know that they have to have these monthly shows. But how can you miss these guys if you constantly see them? If they never go away, well, you're never going to miss a guy. The only guy I can't wait to see, I guess I throw Bill Goldberg in this category now too, is Brock Lesnar. And again, there's different, probably extenuating circumstances with contracts, why we don't see him very often. But man, Brock's booked perfectly. When Brock's not there, Paul Heyman talks. When Brock's there, Paul Heyman still talks. But we want to see him. Like, it's the only guy that they do it really, really well with. And it's too bad because the roster's never been more talented, but I feel like they're just constantly fighting an uphill battle.
Well, I hope that Heyman does not listen to this particular podcast this week, because he will chew us both out if he did over the length of Raw and too much content. I'm sure Paul would give it to us. So everybody...
Brian, I'm speaking for Brian Fritz right now.
Oh, it's
Brian,
not like
happy to go one-on-one with you.
Yeah, it's not like Paul's never done that to me before, you know, and tried to jerk my chain or, you know, do stuff. So Paul does it to everybody, and I am far from excluded in that. I encourage everybody go to SI.com and check out Justin's fantastic weekly column up there. Great work as always. It comes out every Wednesday. What do you got coming up in Week in Wrestling in the coming weeks?
We just inked the deal, let's say. We'll have Adam Cole next week, and he'll be writing about Adam this past summer after he defeated Jay Lethal for his second world title, the Ring of Honor world title. He wrote a Wrestler's Tribune that I thought was really touching. Talked about how he was raised by his grandmother, how he got sick, how she passed away. Really touching story and kind of behind the curtain look at Adam Cole. I don't know what he'll write about next week. I think he's got big shoes to fill again because I thought Disco Inferno was up there for me, at least, with Lance Storms, who was kind of like, let's put a break on what we do in the ring and let's tell better stories. And Disco, I thought Disco's was so good today, where he talked about a key thing with wrestlers is imitating them. You want fans to imitate you, and you need a character to do that. And, I mean, who didn't want to, if you were that age, who didn't want to imitate Disco Inferno? He had a fun character, and he really had, I mean, Langoberti's in great shape, or was in great shape, he's still in good shape now, but he had no business succeeding on that roster. There were guys more talented, there were guys bigger, stronger, but he really carved out a niche by having a terrific character. So we'll have Adam Cole next week, and that'll be the lead. We have 5 questions next week with WWE superstar Kurt Hawkins. What else do we have next week? We've got a couple of things that I'm still working on. I will have the Bischoff files with Eric Bischoff. If anyone ever has any suggestions, I should actually put that on Twitter. I'm always open to ideas about WCW history, and Eric's so open and accessible about speaking about them. And, you know, there was something else, too. I'm holding out on you, Brian. What else do we have next week? We have Adam Cole next week. We have,
yeah, Kurt Hawkins. You got the Wrestler's Tribune. Well, you got the Tribune. You always have the segment with Conrad Thompson and Bruce Pritchard.
Yep. And then we'll have, and I'm just hesitant to say it, a wrestling legend, tag team legend. But we're still working out the details right now.
Okay.
I haven't done the interview yet. That's the one I'm forgetting. But it would be if it happens, for those listening. The estate of the tag team wrestling, and we talk about his career, and we do a lot of that stuff. If it happens, I can say it's Road Warrior Animal, and I think that would be fun too, just because there's so many different readers. You know, we've got a diverse readership in the sense that there's some guys who email and they are diehard, and I'm telling you, diehard, no infinitely more than I do, 80s fans, and then we've got guys from the 90s, and they are attitude. Then we have Attitude Era fans, and they want more Attitude Era, and then there's it's funny. I was emailing this one person and, well-written emails and talking about the business. And emailed him back. And I said, do you write or what do you do? And emailed back and said, no, I want to, but I'm only 13. I'm in the 7th grade.
Oh, jeez.
So, yeah, but the kid wrote a nice email. It was respectful.
Right. I mean, that's engaged. Amazing.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. I mean, that was me. I didn't have email at the time because I was a little. That was after my time. But I remember when I first got on America Online, which I'm sounding like a million years old. I was so excited I was laughing writing that hotline thing with Eric Bischoff, the hotline piece, because anything on the hotline you can find on Google now within, 30 seconds, maybe, if it takes that long?
Right.
I mean, it's just a different era of wrestling fans. So, no, I mean, it's one of the – it's always a highlight when people email. There's one particular emailer who doesn't think I'm positive enough toward Roman Reigns, and lets me know about it in some less than positive expressions. But no, overall, I always try. My point is, I always try to add a little bit of new with a little bit of old. And I think with Adam Cole, with Animal, with Kurt Hawkins, with Eric Bischoff, with Conrad Thompson, who I think that podcast is tremendous. I think we'll have a little bit of everything. And I'm still working on one more piece to next week's column that I think could arguably be the best part, but again, it's too soon to tell if we'll be able to connect with them. But it would be so much fun if these guys want to talk. But so there's lots to be excited for next week. I'll have a big Rumble themed edition come the 25th. So I've got some fun stuff. We've got, I think, the 18th. We have a Tribune with. It was tricky to do because it's translated, but it was in person, and we had a translator there with Jushin Thunder Liger. And he goes into his WCW memories. That'll be fun. We've got a Lillian Garcia piece coming up. So a lot of good stuff coming up. I'm excited about the share, and I hope we can, if people ever have questions, you know, my emails at the end of every column, it's jbarrasso@gmail.com, but I'm at Justin Barrasso on Twitter, and I should probably do a little bit more fan interactive stuff with Eric on online, only because, hey, if you got people who are passionate about this, it's so much fun to share the process with them.
Absolutely. So fantastic stuff as always. Always great to catch up with you as well. And we'll do this more often, hopefully. You know, I've had you on here a couple of times. I always like the conversation and get good feedback from it as well. So you keep up the great work, and we'll continue to do this more often, hopefully.
Thank you, Brian. I think, you know, for your listeners too, having met you, having read your work, having connected with you, it's just nice that, I don't know, I feel like you're making a commitment to somebody when you listen to their podcast, when you read their work. And there's an inherent trust in reader and writer, not to get too far into journalism, but you want to be able to trust that person, and that's a source for you, and that's someone, if he knows something, will he share it? And the great thing about your writing is, like, you're funny when you need to be, you know, when it calls for it. You're serious when it calls for it. Like, I don't know, I feel like a big thing for me when I read, and I think you do it very well, and the guys at ESPN are extremely talented at this too. Like, I mean, if I'm reading your story, I'm putting, not that I can't critique it or ask questions,
sure,
or follow up questions, but I just mean, do I trust the writer in terms of, like, I'm putting my faith in this story, I'm giving you my time. And like, when I read a Brian Fritz story, I'm not sure there's a better compliment for a writer. That's why I think that, and not every story we write is breaking news or, like, I think we like to have fun with our pieces and like to write stuff that people would want, that we'd like to read too. So, I don't know. I think that if you're listening to Brian from another listener, take it from me, you're in good hands.
Well, thank you, man. I really appreciate that. So everybody can check that out on SI.com. It comes out every Wednesday, This Week in Wrestling. And thanks again, man. I appreciate it. Reminder, everybody, please subscribe to the podcast. There's a multitude of places where you can get it. iTunes, where you can rate and review it. You can also find us on Stitcher, Google Play, the TuneIn app, and on SoundCloud. And of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Brian Fritz. Appreciate everybody for listening, and I will talk to you next time right here, Between the Ropes.